You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 62. Got myself, Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Just the two of us today, Steve, and we got a fun, kind of old faithful show here. Reminds me of some of the stuff we were doing last season. Talking second half bounce backs, and not necessarily names we would etch in stone as a blanket statement that these guys will bounce back, but going to be breaking down if they could, what our thoughts are. We've talked a lot lately about Statcast. We'll kind of take that into consideration, but with a grain of salt. And just look at the big picture for a handful of hitters and a few pitchers as well, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Steve, I told you offline, I'm kind of in the fried chicken food coma from a little traveling family in town here in central Illinois. It's a little backwoods country dinner. How's it going out there on the shore, man?
Good, man. Yeah, just got down the Jersey Shore for the next week and a half. So a similar, although slightly different vibe, you know, laid back, maybe not full or, in a food coma, but, in like a semi vacation mode, I'll be working from here for the most part. So,
yeah. What are you doing there? Is this a pass the baby around, like family?
Yeah.
Gathering?
No. Like, we've been here with the baby so far. But you know, it being 4th of July weekend coming up and everything, there'll be some more people in and out, still trying to be relatively careful with, you know, everything going on still, and
sure,
you know, more just not wanting the baby to get sick just because she's still so young. But
we'll
be here watching some baseball. I got Otani versus the White Sox on my screen right now, and you know, do some podcasts from here, so it's great. Doesn't much get much better than 4th of July at the Jersey Shore if you're from the area around here. So
no, I got my my Will Smith just went yard notification. Freddie Freeman also on my home league, so I got the back to back there, dude. Did you see the Freddie Freeman stuff?
It's interesting, and I think it's kind of been the takeaway, and what my take sort of has been is that, like, how do you feel like, well, like, that the Dodgers can't be happy about this? Like,
no, it's bad PR. PR for them.
Yeah, it's just seemingly like, I know it's he didn't come out and say it, but you basically, it seems like he does not want to be there because of this. Like, I know it's like a secondary takeaway, and you know, if you'd ask him, he wouldn't say that at all, and I'm sure it's not that bad, but still, like, I don't know. That's just a strange thing. And you know, my buddy joked, Rich. You know, you've talked to him on Twitter like a bunch.
Love Rich.
The Braves should trade for him back. And like, I was like, that'd be hilarious. He's like, I'm serious. I'm like, you know, actually, it might not be that crazy of an idea. Like, I know Olson's younger, so maybe the Dodgers would have to give something back with that, but. You know, I don't know. That's just a strange thing to come out.
It's very, yeah, NBA. Like, it reminds me of the NBA where players start
like demanding trades, right? But this is almost like he has like buyer's remorse for what he did. You know, like it's just crazy.
I mean, the fact that the agent didn't tell him about the final offer and all this stuff. Uh-huh, it's just like, uh-huh. Yeah, he should not be working with any other player right now. I mean, I guess from some of the stuff I've read,
Swanson's agent, and Swanson was like, yeah, like I love, like I'm not changing at all. So there needs to be like a, you know, an e-reality show on all this, you know, like how they have like you know, to bring in a WWE reference, they do like, you know, the WWE Mr. and Ms., like, or you know, WWE Divas show on E, like with all the drama in the background, like that's what this is kind of reminiscent of. It's just crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, yeah, no question. It was always kind of a love affair for Freddie Freeman and the Braves, and for good reason. But since we talked about it, yeah, Casey Close, his agent, never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer. And ultimately, the Braves had put a deal out. Freddie would have taken the ATL deal if he had known about it. So, yeah, stay tuned, grab the popcorn. But that was pretty crazy. But otherwise, yeah, Steve, I'm having a great little, midsummer fantasy stretch here. I went to a Brewers game on Sunday, saw Rowdy Tellez hit two bombs that were category swingers for me. So I was, like, leading the chance, even though I'm a Cardinals fan. So, yeah, it's fun times, man. I'm really pumped up about this show. So assessing second half bounce backs, this is one that going into the WAF archives last year, we kind of had these second half bounce back predictions. And of course, some of them hit, some of them missed. But when you look at the names and think about where their seasons ended up, it really does remind you like how young we are into the season. And I know for most, head-to-head leagues with playoffs, we're pretty much, at the halfway point or beyond it. So that's kind of why we wanted to do this show. But last year, some of the head-scratcher names we were talking about included Paul Goldschmidt, Pete Alonso, Julio Urias, Max Fried, Luis Castillo. Those are the ones that kind of turned out to be good second-half bounce backs, which is crazy, again, to think that they needed to bounce back. But then there are also names like Kenta Maeda, Keston Hira. So really, you can, obviously the tale of two seasons, time will tell on this show's rundown. But I think it's a great topic. I think we're kind of at that point in the season where we've talked about it. It's not like there's as many must-add people on the wires and on fab budgets. So there's a little bit of that, people moving on and giving up hope on some of these names. But I think it's a fun show rundown, a chance for us to do some player analysis and talk about some names that are pretty rostered but might be trade targets or also kind of, in shallower leagues or leagues outside of industry leagues, NFBC, some of these guys are pretty available where you could potentially add them. So super pumped. What are your thoughts overall about the assessing second half bounce backs?
Yeah, I love it. Glad we did it last year. And I think the biggest takeaway from that great intro that you just had for this topic is that like you would forget that like Goldie needed that, not needed, but he was pretty below average the first 2 months. Like I remember I actually traded him for Julio Urias last year. And looking back at it, I kind of wish I didn't, as great as Urias was, Goldie was like a league winning first baseman in the second half. So like you forget that, when you look at the full season around lines, it's like, oh, Goldschmidt had another, he had his great year after the adjustment year in St. Louis. But you forget how kind of mediocre and meh the April and May were for him. So there'll be a lot of interesting names we talk about. And, I think that's a pretty good hit list for those guys. Like Fried, Castillo is, if you bought those pitchers around this time last year, you did really, really well. So hopefully we can find some guys and talk about some guys like that this year.
Love it, man. Well, for everybody joining us, we appreciate you joining. We'll jump in a second, but be sure to go out, guys. Follow us on Twitter, at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. And throw us a review. This time of season's kind of, if you're here with us, we appreciate it because we know, we're past draft season, and we feel like we're part of your week. So love that. Give us a rating if you could. All that stuff, super helpful. And of course, check out all the Pitcherless Pods at Pitcherless Pods. The great tools out there across the entire lineup. I think I mentioned it to you, Steve. The next week I'll be joining Adam Howe and Kevin Hastings on The Wire. That'll be a lot of fun. But yeah, go out there, guys. Give us a like, a subscribe. We would really appreciate it. And that kind of segues, because you can always email us questions or reach out on Twitter. Steve, do you want to introduce our listener question we had over the past week?
Yeah, this was a good one. This was from Sal on Twitter. He wrote in, "Fellas, hey, hope all is well. Love the trade pod. Question for you too. How do you ultimately decide to punt/trade a guy? My example is Morton. He finally turned it around, or seems so. 40 strikeouts since last 25 innings pitch. So I'm glad I'm held, but I'd love to hear how you guys make that decision to buy, sell, hold when a guy struggles out of the gate. I could have traded him for pennies, and now I could probably get close to full value, but maybe he's going to completely normalize his numbers and have a great second half. I'll hang up and listen. Nice little Mike Francesa reference there from Sal. Always appreciate that. A great way to make you first on the rundown in my book. But I think that's a great question because there is like that conundrum. It's like, okay, like this guy is clearly underperforming. I could try to get whatever I can get for him now and salvage it, or I could hold and hope that he bounces back. And that's what we think Morton is doing. And then after that, I think that there's kind of like a forgotten area. It's like, okay, now that he's bounced back and looks good, like, should you cash in close to the full value because of those concerns from the beginning of the year? Like, you know, who knows if he's going to keep it up, or is it going to be somewhere in the middle between the poor performance and the bounce back? You know, I think that's a good question too, but I'll kick it to you with your thoughts first before I go into it.
Yeah, I mean, my initial thoughts are to kind of follow the process, right? Make sure you're not just looking at kind of the surface line box score. I also like to read, you know, the RotoWire updates. It's good to know kind of what 90% of people are looking at when they assess that, which is typically the little write-up blurbs. Sometimes those are really informative. Other times they'll completely bypass the fact that, you know, they might have had 6 Ks, but they only had 10 swing strikes or something like that. So I try to go in, I look at, you know, if there's been any velocity tweaks, any pitch mix changes that seem encouraging game over game, see if that narrative kind of aligns with the results. Another thing that I kind of brought up on the response to Sal, which I think is really important this time of year, I know, and this applies to head-to-head leagues primarily, but I guess it would also apply to Roto if you're trying to chase categories and everything. I know we're just coming up on All-Star break, but to me, it's still not too early to look at the home stretch of opponents. So I like to go look at like a team's, you know, in the case of Morton, go look at the Braves' upcoming opponents, not just in July would be really important if you're scrambling to make the playoffs, but if you're in pole position and you really are expecting that you do make the playoffs, what do the August matchups look like? And kind of count out on your fingers who they're expected to face, because if you happen to run into a buzzsaw of matchups, and you'd be surprised, even teams that are in lighter divisions. I just looked at like a Tristan McKenzie who got dropped in my league, and I was like, man, this might be worth a waiver claim. Went out and looked at like his upcoming matchups, and outside of 2 Tigers matchups, the other 6 ones are what I would call like, you know, do not start normal matchups. I mean, and granted, if a pitcher is good enough, he might be a guy you roll out against any opponent. But I really like to do that just because the last thing you want is to see like at the Dodgers, at Coors, for a guy that you really are like counting on in a crunch week. So those are a couple like tips and tricks I would like to do. But I'll turn it over to you, Steve, on if you have thoughts on the broader topic or for Morton specifically. We can talk Morton too. He kind of fits the second half bounce back theme too.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think that process is spot on. Like I couldn't agree more with how you would assess that and, you know, how to dig in. But as far as more of like the overall, should I trade this guy? Should I hold this guy? It's like, I tend to think that like, okay, if you have, like, I'm sort of buying low on a guy, like for Morton, if you're holding him, you're buying low on him without trading him, right? Like, you know, I would want to target a guy like that because you theoretically can get him for cheaper than actually what he costs at draft day or what his ultimate value will be, right? That's the sort of thing that, you know, I would try to do regardless whether it's a player on my team or not. But I think I like to apply that sort of philosophy to, okay, you know, I'm holding, you know, Jonathan India in my home league, for instance. Like, yeah, I could drop him or trade him for pennies on the dollar, or I could look and say, hey, you know, go through that process that you just described. Look at his plate discipline, his batted ball metrics, you know, all that sort of stuff that we would do for hitters, not necessarily for pitchers, but you know, just the hitting categories that you would look at under the hood, essentially, that we go through on the show week in and week out, and decide whether you want to hold on to that and essentially buy low on the player. So I think you have to look at it like that. If you have an underperforming player, like, would you want to go trade for this guy if he wasn't on your team because you think you can get him for cheaper? But then there's also the case like, okay, I now have Morton. I made a few ads and did okay in pitching or made a different trade for pitching. Now Morton is looking like himself. Do you now have that excess value to go out and say, okay, maybe I could trade Morton or a different pitcher because I now have that excess? Like, always use those tools to your advantage from, like, you know, the larger view picture. Like, that's how I would view it. It's like, okay, if you're getting Morton and he's starting to bounce back and it looks like he has and looks like he's the Morton of old, do I now have a strength that I can deal from to fill another hole?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I know you talked about different tools that you can do to just go out or, you know, try to seek out other members in your league that have an extreme need that a guy like Morton could fill. Or, you know, to the earlier point, it's like if another person in your league has a playoff spot locked up and you think Morton, you know, he obviously has the upside to be what, like an SP2, SP3. If you're a little worried that in the near term it might be wobbly, maybe that's an area you could deal as well. But yeah, it's interesting for Morton. I mean, his past outings, like 3 starts ago and 4 starts ago, he had a whiff rate of 49% and 47%, which the league average being 25%, it's like, oh my gosh, like he's back, it's shining. But really, his last 2 starts, which were great on the surface, the whiff rate dropped to 32% and then down to 20% on his last outing. Now, I don't think that you want to like overreact to that. I mean, overall, he's riding the ship. You also need to look at opponents that he faced as well. Like, his get right weeks were against the Pirates and the Cubs, but then he turned around against the Giants and the Phillies and put up good starts as well. So it's all just, you know, food for thought with Morton, but I think the process is really what the question was about. So I don't know if you got anything else to add on Morton. I could go either way, honestly, with that. You know, do you sell or do you hold? I think it really is context.
Yeah, I think it would be more of a buy/hold for me now at this point. Like, even if you could get, especially if you can get, you know, you're not going to get the 50 or 60 cents on the dollar that would have cost for Morton in May, but it still might cost 80 or 90, which I would definitely be interested in. And you know, I think it works the other way too. If you now are okay on pitching and he's back, like, you can get pretty much close to full value for Morton. So
yeah,
could be good either way. Like you said, contact dependent.
Love it, Sal. Thank you for writing in and always tuning into the show. And you guys can always hit us with questions on Twitter at WinsAbovePod or email us winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. Steve, let's get into some of the second half bounce back analysis here. And let's start with one Max Muncy. As we record here Wednesday night, Muncy is, you know, coming into the season, he had one of the broadest ranges of draft value in terms of min pick, max pick, because people didn't know what to do with the elbow. If you were to just kind of do the lazy analysis, you'd say, oh, it's really bothering him. So far, he's had a 158 batting average, a 319 OBP. Is always great at taking a walk, but just a 274 slug is really what's killing you there with, you know, an OPS that's not even sniffing what he usually does. That said, the plate discipline, which is a big part of Max Muncy, what makes him great in points leagues, he's striking out 22% of the time, not bad. 19% walk rate is just elite. So that's a pretty good foundation and floor, along with the fact that he's batting cleanup almost every night for the Dodgers. I think they've been putting him at the 5 spot in a few recent games, but a lot to evaluate with Muncy under the hood. And just curious, your initial thoughts on Max Muncy. Do we think this will just be kind of a down year and he won't figure it out? Maybe the injury is kind of lingering and it will stay that way. or do we think that he can kind of come out of that? He's had, you know, an interesting little week in the past week. I think he's got a couple homers in his past 10 games. I think he hit one yesterday with a double as well. So Muncy's at the Rockies this week. It could be a get right series for him, and he could just, you know, rise out of the prolonged slump he's been in. But what are your thoughts on Muncy?
Yeah, I know it's lazy, but you got to wonder how much that elbow is bothering him. Like,
for sure.
I was in on him on draft season. I think on both of my draft and holds, I think in our draft and hold that isn't doing too well, I, you know, remember taking a shot and being like, you know, if he's healthy, like it's, we're getting Max Muncy at a super, super discount.
Yeah.
So far that discount hasn't proven to be, fruitful, but you know, another lazy analysis thing, you know, if you go to a Savant page and, you know, you click on the little percentile bars and heat maps, if you click on the year, you could drop down and, you know, go to years past and, you know, you click on 2021, everything's bright and dark red, and you click on 2022 and everything shoots all the way to the left and goes to the blue, except for that chase rate and walk rate. And the barrel percentage is actually still pretty good, which is surprising considering that the exit velocity, max exit velocity, and hard hit percentage just isn't there at all. But that being said, like, I think it could be a matter of him getting right and you know, feeling okay, and that elbow will you know, prove to be something that he puts behind him. I'm trying to pull up his, you know, rolling graphs. If you go to, I know Scott Shue talked about this, and it's one of his favorite tools. If you go to FanGraphs and the graph page, and you click on by game, and you just look at, you know, his rolling wOBA, right? And, you know, you see like the peaks and valleys in 2021, 2022, you know, he has some, you know, downtrends that, you know, are close to as bad as this. Like, you know, Muncy is kind of like a streaky player, but, you know, there are some really, really high peaks. And what the problem is, his downtrends this year have been where they are, but the peaks have been just, you know, right around league average. So he's hovering between league average and then this like unusable player as far as like his rolling wOBA. So, you know, it's something to just keep an eye on. You probably got to get more granular than that as far as like, you know, his hard hit percentage. And I'm just pulling that up, and it's actually trending in the right direction. You know, about, you know, in the middle of May, his hard hit percentage was like well below 20% as far as like a 15 game rolling average. But since then, it's been on the uptrend and it's back to, you know, Max Muncy's level. So that's encouraging, you know, that's really, the results are deserved based on at least just hard hit percentage over the last few games. And that's where this rolling graph tool can just be really, really useful to say, hey, is he just running into a lucky stretch, or is he actually hitting the ball harder over the last 2 weeks? And he really has been. So I'm in on Muncy. I think that this means that he might be past that elbow injury and could be a great second half bounce back.
Yeah, I think when you look at a guy coming off the injury, and like you said, he is somebody whose rolling charts tend to be up and down and up and down. That's going to be a theme for a lot of these guys. And it's easy to just kind of assign it to that. And I'm not saying that it has nothing to do with it, of course, like something has clearly been off, but you don't want that to kind of sway your mentality of who this player is. Again, looking at some of the names last year when we did the similar show, Pete Alonso, Goldie, like some of the name value of some of these guys, like, you know, bar the injury, Muncy is an elite hitter. And, you know, the barrel rate has been encouraging so far, where on the month over month splits, it was at a 14% in April, which is great. 6% in May, where it came really down, and that was the low point. And then it's been back up to a 14.6% in June. So barrels are there. He's seen the ball leave the yard a couple times recently. So yeah, I'm with you on buying a bounce back for Muncy. I don't know that he's going to take the league by storm, but I do think from here on in, you can probably count on, you know, 15, 18 homers and a decent average and terrific OBP, and hitting in that lineup at cleanup, I think it's such a good buy low, or if somebody did kind of move on from him, I think it's a smart add as well in shallower leagues. So with you there on Muncy. Kind of transitioning to another guy who is perennially up and down on rolling charts, and we've talked about him a ton, so we don't need to spend loads of time on him, but Joey Votto is such a tough one to pin down. And I know this was my chalkboard guy, bold prediction guy. I think we have had several shares, and he's kind of an industry favorite as a sleeper this year. But it's been so up and down, Steve. And now kind of as the dust is settling on a recent slump, Votto is batting .213, a .333 OBP, similar to Muncy there, that you can always expect about a 100-point bump for his ability to take a walk, and then a .372 slug. His K rate has actually gone in a much better direction from April, 32% strikeout rate, 25% in May, all the way down to 17% in June. So he's cleaning up the plate discipline, and the hard hit rates have been improved since that disastrous April that was about as bad as it can get. But now it's like the power has kind of vanished, and Votto's certainly no spring hen. So it kind of begs the question, less on the injury, more on just the age, and if he's, you know, what can we expect from Joey Votto? His roster ship is about half of what Muncy's is, so this is much more relevant for kind of the drop and on the wire discussion. But what are your thoughts on Votto here? Do you think there's just going to be some mediocrity and up and down and kind of a stream, or do you think he can do kind of what something similar to what he did last year when he just set the league on fire in the second half? Your thoughts on Votto, Steve?
I don't know. My gut tells me that there's some stretch like that in the second half. My head is telling me that this just might be an off year or kind of the end for Votto. I did just make this switch for him today after Rowdy Tellez hit his second home run, so four in the last
that
days.
That was going to be my comparison.
Because the last three games. Yeah. So, yeah. Tellez has, like, you know, whatever. He has like 15 homers this year. I've rostered him probably for 2/3 of the season, and I think I have like 5 of those homers. It's impressive how few of that, how little of that production I actually have.
So, you know, Votto's going to go on a tear.
Now Votto will probably go. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. He has hit a few doubles the last few days. I know he has one tonight. He had a few on Sunday versus the Giants, and he's hitting the ball hard. You know, another, you know, nice, I think, underutilized tool is the StatCast game logs on Servant. So if you go to game logs and then StatCast, you can see every single plate appearance and the result. And, you know, you can see like exit velocity, launch angle, and distance. And then actually, if it's more than 2 days old, there's a little video camera button that you can actually watch the play, the result, which is really cool. And I think underutilized on Servant. So, you know, if you know, I'm just looking at it and, you know, spitballing, like, he's hitting the ball harder, like a lot of, like, you know, high 90s, back earlier in the Dodgers series about a week ago, he had, four balls hit over 100 miles an hour. So there are some signs there. And I think it's just a matter of, like, it's hard because, especially when there's a slump like this after such a prolonged slump, right? It's like so easy. And I just did it. I dropped him. Like, it's so easy because the year line doesn't cushion or make it look prettier than it does when, you know, a guy struggled for all of April and, you know, just battled to get over the Mendoza line, right? That makes it so much harder to hold on to a guy, which, you know, maybe that's not the smartest thing to do, because you know, that's the nature of baseball. There are streaks like this, and there could be another one coming for Votto on the opposite end, and it looks like there might be with the way that he's hitting the ball recently and that plate discipline, which is the most encouraging thing, to have his year-long strikeout rate back under 25% after it was, like, you know, close to that 40% in April. That's impressive.
Yeah, my thoughts on Votto, a couple quick tidbits, is June was bad on the surface, especially in like 5x5 leagues. I think any points league, you just have to hold on to Votto because he's such a cheat code when everything is firing on all cylinders, that it's kind of worth it and you've got a little cushion with a high floor even when balls aren't leaving the park. But June, while the surface numbers weren't very good, the barrel rate was definitely down a little bit, but he had just a 6% soft hit rate, which is unheard of. The hard hit rate was really close to where it was when he got hot in May, at 48.5% hard hit rate in June, which is fantastic, probably like 85th, 90th percentile there. And just a 12% home run to fly ball rate on 38% of fly balls. So just seems like luck was not going in his favor. He is a huge pole hitter, so that brings up some of the stuff Scott Chu talked about on our show last week, that like, yeah, maybe be careful on like XBA and everything with somebody who pulls the ball that much. But he does, there are a lot of fly balls in there as well for Votto. So I do think the home runs are going to come around. I think you got to hold in a points league 5x5. I would understand if you want to add for like a Tellez. But the last note is his exit velocity on fly balls and line drives. Because of the fact that we were just talking about, like, the pull rate is so high, you kind of want to look at when he is getting under the ball and putting it in the air, what's the exit velocity? And right now it's 29th in the league throughout the whole season. And that's ahead of some names like Goldie, Mike Trout, Pete Alonso. So I still think there's some power that's going to surge through here for Votto, even though the, you know, the surface line doesn't look great with, like, the 213 average and the homers have slowed down. He's just got 5 on the season after we were really hoping he'd be 30, 35 homer type of range. So I think I'm a buy on Votto, but I'm a little biased there, and I think that might be seeping into it. But time will tell. What are your thoughts? Blanket statement, Steve. Buy or sell a bounce back yeah. Where Votto's like a top, let's say, 150 player rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm buying. I saw a tweet. I forget who it was. I wish I could remember so I can give it credit. But he's never hit below like 261 in a season. So, you know, it's not going to be around 213. It might be 250. But, you know, that'll probably come with if he does get hot and the luck turns, like, you know, another 20 home runs for the year. So salvageable. I think it'll be a salvageable buy. I don't think it'll be last year or Goldie like bounce back, but I think he'll salvage his season, which for how bad it's gone, like if you do add him, there'll be a lot of good things there.
Let's talk about his teammate Jonathan India. India was a guy we liked at kind of the end of that second base tier before a cliff during draft season. Then of course he was out for almost the first 2 months of the season with the hand injury, and now he's back and a little lackluster, but India's another guy who kind of has the peaks and valleys and, you know, not the best plate discipline in the world. So you kind of expect that there might be some cold streaks, but it has been cold. Batting 227, 284 OBP, a 330 slug, a couple homers, one steal, and 95 plate appearances. Penny, for your thoughts on Jonathan India, Steve. We liked him coming into the season. You think he'll play his way out of this, or what are your thoughts under the hood for Jonathan India?
I didn't realize how much I liked him until I realized that he's like on most of my teams. I guess I just loved him where he was going around drafts. I know second base was a little bit shallower, and you know, bought into some of the plate skills. He walked 11.3% of the time, and I think that's what's most concerning. He's only walking 3.2% of the time right now, and a lot of that is the fact that he's been hurt for such a long time. Like, he got hurt, went on had like a minimum stay on the IL, then came back, played 3 games, and then was out with the same injury for like a month. So there really hasn't been that sort of time to get in the groove, because those, you know, 86, whatever, 98 plate appearances he has have been broken up by 2 stints on the IL. So there really hasn't been an extended period of playing time. So I think it's more of just a matter of giving him a little bit more time. I know he has 2 home runs in the last week. Maybe the walks will start to come. He isn't striking out too much. It's in line with what he was at last year at 23%. He was 22% last year. So
yeah, that's better than I remembered. I think he started out striking out a lot more and then kind of cleaned it up in the second half.
Yeah, and the barrel rate is basically cut in half from last year, so you'd like to see that to start to trend up. But I think it's just a matter of time, to give him a little bit more of a look, just because it's another one of those cases where he doesn't have that cushion to cover up a cold streak or, you know, getting his timing back, which is something that he needs to do after missing that long of a time frame. So I think it's a good buy. I think he probably has been dropped in a lot of leagues. Maybe not that many just because it was such a high cost. But if it continues another week, the cost might be minimal to free. So I think India just is a matter of time before he bounces back and, you know, provides a good average with decent pop and maybe some steals along the way too. Who knows with the hamstring injury, maybe you can temper your expectations on how many bases you'll actually steal, but should be good average with decent pop. And, you know, in that ballpark, he should bat first. And, you know, the Reds have been better than what they were in April. So there's that too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to mention. His batting leadoff is nice that at least he slots right in there. Hey, maybe if Votto comes around, India will follow suit, get some good counting stats there as well. Reds upcoming games, and India did hit a homer a couple nights ago, three RBIs as well against the Cubs on a two-hit game. Upcoming series for the Reds is Braves, Mets, then they get the Pirates, ooh, then the Rays and the Yankees. So they got a little bit of a tricky start to July. That maybe more people will jump off board if he doesn't turn it around there. But I agree. I think on the overall perspective, India showed enough there, and yeah, that the walk rate last year was kind of overlooked that it was that high. So
I think that's why he was such a good target on draft day, why his cost was so high, because not only were those surface numbers there and he popped, you know, 20 plus home runs with good average rookie of the year, but people saw that walk rate and were like, wow, you know, it's impressive. So I understand why people liked him and why they still do like him, but maybe we'll just need some time for it to bounce back to where it was.
Love it. We will talk about some players who are not Cincinnati Reds and some big names, as well as getting some pitchers and talking about potential second half bounce backs for some of those guys. First, we are going to take a real quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, not very often we get to talk about a first rounder and spend some time here, but we got to hit on Mr. Juan Soto. I know we kind of breezed over Soto last week with Scott Chu on the show. Some tidbits in here because Scott spent some time on Soto as well, but it's been another, similar to last year, kind of a frustrating first half for Soto owners. Of course, you have to recalibrate and say this is a very high bar that he has set for himself. Just a 224 average has been the main issue. The OBP is fantastic at 378. If his average was anywhere near normal, it would be among the best OBPs in the league. The 437 slug, you'll take it. He's got 14 homers, five steals, I think, is nice for Soto. But it's mainly the 224 batting average. And it kind of calls into question, do we need to look at Soto as not the greatest hitter in baseball, which has kind of been the crown he's had for the past couple of years, where Mike Trout is kind of, you know, passed that baton on a little bit. But you also don't want to overreact. I mean, it's Juan Soto. We might just be seeing a kind of a prolonged cold streak for him. What are your thoughts on Soto? Feel free to take it any direction on the Statcast numbers, the ground balls, anywhere you want to go with this one, Steve.
Yeah, I feel like we just had this conversation with him. Was he on this episode last year? He should have been if he wasn't, because I think people were panicking. But it wasn't the batting average. It was like the lack of homers. If I remember, probably around this time last year, he had like 7 or 8 homers, something like that.
Yeah.
He's got 14 now, which is, you know, kind of basically what you would expect for Soto, you know, hit anywhere between 30 and 40 home runs. And he's on pace to do that. But, you know, it's the average. So I think Scott sort of nailed it on the head. It's that average exit velocity on grounders. So I guess, you know, the way to sort of Soto's ground ball percentage didn't really matter because he hit the ball so hard, right? Mm-hmm. So like his, you know, above 50% ground ball rate was a non-issue because he just smoked them, right? Like they were finding holes. And like Scott said, a good way to tank your batting average is to hit those ground balls slower. So it's a better ground ball percentage. It's only 50%, where the last 2 years he was close to 53%. But if those aren't hit as hard, yeah, your BABIP is gonna drop. And I don't know. This still seems like it's picking nits with like one of the greatest hitters in the world, and it's probably just a second, close to a half a season or a third of a season where he hits 225. Like that's gonna happen. Like I would not be surprised if, you know, he hits 350 over the next, you know, third of a season. So. Just because he's Juan Soto, I know that's like lazy analysis, but if someone's concerned about this ground ball rate and then the average and the weaker ground balls, I'm absolutely buying from that owner with any concerns. So, yeah, I think it's a great point. I think, you know, Scott sort of diagnosed it. But like Scott said, I think he mentioned it on the first pitch or on our show, like, if we know about this stuff, like you sure as hell bet that Juan Soto knows right. about his, you know, the exit velocity on his ground balls and even more. So I'd bet on that being corrected and corrected very quickly. So yeah, if I could get Juan Soto for 99 cents on the dollar, I'm doing it. So yeah, I'm in on a Juan Soto bounce back. You don't see the air quotes I'm doing with my fingers, but yeah.
Yeah, in the past week, batting 353 on the average, so it might already be happening. But over the past month, batting just 200 from a batting average standpoint. So yeah, I think this is just Soto figuring it out, and you know he's gonna find a way. It's kind of like Goldie for that 5 year stretch where it was like, and Bryce Harper too, where it might look a little different from season to season, but he is going to put up top five offensive fantasy value. So I would pay that for sure and double that in a points league with just a 14% strikeout rate and 19% walk rate. So yeah, I think enough said. If anything, it's really exciting that the fly ball rate is up from where it's been the past 2 years. I think it's just a matter of him, you know, and there was even an interview I was checking out that Soto was talking about how He's sat on a few pitches that he shouldn't have. He's chased a little bit. So while he's still taking walks, I think it's really just been kind of in a little bit of a funk on like identifying pitches. I don't think that's a skill, you know, dissolving or anything. He's still got one of the best eyes. And I think as long as he just picks the pitch to do damage on, we're going to keep seeing him, you know, basically hit 30 homers. And even though he's batting 224 right now, I would take the over on him finishing above like 280, which would be a huge second half for him. So, yep, I'm right there with you on Juan Soto. Let's talk about Nelson Cruz, kind of going down the list. Nice segues here. First of all, Steve, we got to wish Nelson Cruz a happy birthday. He'll be 42 years old tomorrow as this show airs. So, yeah, I don't know if you got any words for your boy there is he the oldest?
This is the first year I haven't had Nelson Cruz in like 5 years. So definitely a happy birthday wish from me for Nelson Cruz. For being a perennially undervalued slugger, even though he hasn't been that this year, but things are trending maybe back towards that way, which we'll get into in a second.
Yeah, trending up. You know, the clip is 244 average, 325 OBP, and a 382 slug. Just eight homers, where you kind of chalk Nelson Cruz up for an automatic like 30. But that has definitely gotten better. I think he had just, I want to say like two homers in the first month of the season, and he's kind of ramped up since then. Everyday cleanup hitter, so still in a great spot in a not so great lineup. But I think there's plenty to like here with Cruz. The plate discipline has not, you know, when someone ages, you tend to see the strikeouts go up as they're like getting behind fastballs and stuff. Still just a 22% strikeout rate. 10.6% walk rate is really good. And some of the batted ball stuff looks good too, Steve. So I think this is one that might be kind of an easy call. You got to look past Father Time here with Cruz, but I think it's starting to appear this way. Even though the past 2 weeks he's batting just 149, it looks like the power is waking up, which is what really most people would be concerned about with Cruz so far. But what are your thoughts in addition to that?
Yeah, I'm with you. Another one that I basically agree. You know, the hard hit's been in it's in line with, you know, years that he's been very, very good. So, you know, it's not that absolutely elite like it was even just last year. But, you know, the only thing that I would sort of push back, and, you know, we kind of wrote it off, right? Like, he was pretty bad with Tampa in the second half last year after he got traded. A lot of it had to do with the trop and how hard it is to hit there because the lights, I think he might have even been one to say that it was really hard to hit at home. He just couldn't get used to it. So it's more than just this year that's been downturned, right?
Like, good point, you know, yeah.
But that being said, I wouldn't put it past Cruz to go on another stretch. And you know, he might not be the 270-35 home run hitter, but I think he could be a 250, 25 to 28 homers, which, you know, in this ball run environment is really good. And you're not buying that because the numbers are down and haven't been as good. But, you know, the max exit velocity is still good. The hard hit percentage, like you said, is still good. Plate discipline is still there. It's not like he's like now all of a sudden striking out 30% of the time or anything like that. Which, you know, you would expect that to sort of happen to that age, an aging slugger, right? You know, I think that that's really, really a good sign that those plate skills are still there for Cruz. So I think a hot stretch could be coming. And you know, who knows? He could be a trade candidate, too, to go to a better lineup, better ballpark, too. Not that Nationals ballpark isn't that bad of a hitter's environment, but you know, nor is hitting behind Juan Soto, but you know, it would be a lot better if he was on, like, you know, the Mets that score like the third most runs in the league or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that says it. And just I guess I just don't see where there's no real signs that I'm seeing, like, with the hard hit still there, the K's not like inflating that much. His BABIP's looks normal at 300, but throughout the past 4 or 5 years, he's always ran like a really high BABIP. So I think we're going to see a little positive.
Yeah, because he hits the ball so hard, right?
Yeah. It's just like if all that stuff's happening. I mean, tonight he went 2 for 3 with a couple walks, so he reached 4 times. I think this is a buy low window for Cruz, and he's another guy who is kind of in that same range as like a India or Max Muncy, where in certain like 12 team leagues, there's probably been, you know, some opportunities to pick him up off the wire. And if not, it could be a good kind of midseason trade target as well. So let's shift over to a couple pitchers here to talk about, Steve. And got to go back to your boy, Trevor Rogers. He's been another one that we've talked about throughout the season. And there's probably frustrated managers who are just scouring Twitter and looking for any analysis on Trevor Rogers. and you kind of feel like you see a glimpse, and then he kind of blows up in like the fourth inning. I'm kind of thinking this is this year's Luis Castillo, Steve. Drafted in that, you know, right around pick 100, just a 3-6 record, a 5.86 ERA, a 1.63 WHIP. Plenty of people are jumping off the ship with Trevor Rogers. I know he's on the wire in my home league, and he's just sitting there. Now he's just 57% rostered in Yahoo leagues. The K rate is not there with just 20% strikeout rate. And the walks are up at 10.7, which sometimes you can stomach if the Ks are Freddy Peralta-esque, but they haven't been. So it's tough, man. I've been doing some deep analysis as well. I watched a few innings of his start. He had the Mets back-to-back, and it was kind of positive compared to how bad he had been leading up to it, but he still ended up coughing up a lot of runs. But what do you think on Rogers? Any light at the tunnel, or you think you're just staying away given how volatile it's been for Rogers?
I'm actually a bit more encouraged over the last few results and outings for Rogers than the surface results would show. Mm-hmm. Two starts ago, like you have here, nuts, 24 swinging strikes. He more than held his own against the Mets, 12 Ks, three walks, and nine in the third inning. So, you know, you like to see that in a stretch for a guy that, you know, you buy for the strikeouts, right? Like, that's what Rogers was bringing last year.
Yeah, we were looking for anything like a month and a half ago, right?
Yeah, and the biggest thing, I think, is the fact that the changeup just isn't what it was last year. The changeup last year had a negative 6 run value. This year it's negative 2. The fastball isn't what it was. Last year the fastball had a negative 15 run value. This year it has positive 7. So for pitchers, wow, that's bad. It's got a .323 batting average against, just a .600 slug, and you know last year it was a .222 batting average against with a .344 slug. So it's still missing bats, but he's just not getting a K's with it. The whiff percentage is right in line. It was 27% last year, 25% this year, but he got a 30.5% K percentage and just a 21.4% K percentage this year. So he's like basically missing the put away, like, right? That's where I'm just looking through the run value by pitch type chart. And as I'm going through it, he's just not able to put guys away with the four seamer like he was last year. So, that probably has to do with the fact that, you know, the changeup hasn't been as good. He hasn't had as good of a feel for it. The slider's still been good. So, that's strange. But it just doesn't make sense why the fastball is just totally, totally underperforming. And the fact that he's gotten some whiffs and it looks better over the last few starts, like, that could be what makes it turn, right? Like a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit, Giolito, mentioned last year how he lost feel for his changeup, like his best pitch. Like if Rogers gets that back and it looks like he might start to or makes that tweak, you know, who knows if he's like tipping pitches or whatever, was battling through an injury or something, like this could be the tide turning, and I would grab him essentially in any league where he hit the wire.
Yeah, it's tough. I think the bright spot, as we mentioned, is against the Mets, just the whiff rate and the 12 Ks and the 9 in the third innings. The fastball that you mentioned, Steve, two starts ago when he had the high strikeout game against the Mets, the whiff rate on the fastball was 56%, which is elite. So that's what you want. And then it plummeted down to 24%. But at least the changeup was getting whiffs last game. It just kind of unraveled a little bit. He had like a clean three innings, and I was like ready to pounce because it was like, okay, great. You know, by his standards, a really good outing against the Mets, faces the same lineup, looked good through three innings, and then it was just kind of death by paper cuts. The upside here is just if you look at the last three games, the whiffs are up, the walks are down, and the hard hit rate has been better than league average. So I think there's enough upside, especially if you need pitching, and you're really like shallow on like an SP4, SP5. If your rotation is top heavy, you got to take a gamble on Rodgers. I think now's the time, just because his upcoming opponents, he gets the Nationals. Yeah, I might skip the Angels, but then the Pirates and then the Phillies without Bryce Harper, and Castellanos has been struggling. So I think just the ceiling is so high, whether it's tipping pitches or just a feel, like you're saying, it's potential to find gold in a way that it's really hard to find when it comes to pitching at this point in the season. So I don't know that compared to the other ones, I have the confidence to say he's going to bounce back, but I think that the ceiling, I continue to say, I know we've talked about it a couple times, but I think it's worth taking the gamble on, to where I don't know that it should be as low as like a 55% rostered. I think his last two outings have shown enough for us to be like, maybe this is this year's Luis Castillo. And as disastrous as it looked last year, he righted the ship. And I know we're a little bit past that point in the season, but I have a hard time thinking that, yeah, a pitcher of his age with the stuff that he has won't make it, you know, won't look better than it is, even if it ends up in kind of like a, you know, a 4 ERA with some bumpy starts here and there. But I don't know. Closing thoughts on Rodgers from you.
If you need a starting pitcher and you need to take a flyer for like someone that's really cheaper, essentially on your, you know, wire or free, I would 100% add Trevor Rodgers. I think I got him in TGFBI or on the wire league for like $3. It was uncontested. Like, he was dropped 2 weeks ago. I added him last week for $3. Like, absolutely. I think it's worth it on like name value and like last year's results alone for Rodgers. So the fact that he's been getting some more whiffs recently, I think, is super encouraging and worth a cheap flyer, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it could even be a good thing that he's pieced together different parts over his past two or three outings, that, you know, maybe if the fastball and the change can all work together, then, you know, it'll just click. But it's wishful thinking. Let's talk about Lucas Giolito, Steve. Another guy you spent some time in the offseason looking at. It's been rough goings for Giolito, probably, you know, of any SP1 that stayed healthy, kind of the biggest head scratcher here, with 69 innings, a 5.18 ERA, 27% K rate, 9% walk rate. It's not disastrous there compared to that ERA, but it's certainly not what you signed up for. So do you see anything that makes you think Giolito will turn this around and kind of bounce back in a similar way that he did last year as well?
His last start was encouraging. That looked like the Giolito of old. Like, his changeup was back. Like, that was something that we talked about last year. Like, he essentially did his season-long line of a 5.18 ERA through like the first, you know, 5 weeks. I remember in, you know, mid-May or early May, we were receiving like, you know, what is this SP1 I bought? Like, you know, like, right. People were panicking, right?
Right.
In the third round, like, in I got a 5 ERA in April, but, you know, if you held, it ended up pretty good. So, sure, this is a bit of a longer stretch, but I think it's just been worse starts, right? Like, it wasn't this bad 4 weeks ago for Giolito. There's just been, like, you know, a few 7 and 8 run outings here that have really, really bombed the line. But there obviously are some concerns in the fact that, you know, the walks are up. The Ks are not what they were when it was elite, but it was still close to what it was last year. But in that second half, he really did, you know, bump up the K rate. So if there is that sort of second half bounce back like there was last year for Giolito, like, you know, it could end up with a 30% K rate, because through this bad stretch, it's still what it was on the year. On the whole year last year, if that makes any sense. So, you know, he said he lost a feel for the changeup before. He said that happened, you know, last April, and it looked like it might have happened the last few starts before this. And I think it might be back after the last outing. You know, I watched a lot of it, and he looked like the Lucas Giolito of old. I've put in a few offers for him in a few different places to try and, quote unquote, buy low on him. But, you know, I think the window will rapidly close, and we'll look back at this and be like, hey, yeah, funny, Lucas Giolito had a 5.19 ERA at the end of the June. I know it was the Angels, and they've been sort of struggling, but, you know, six innings, six Ks, two runs is exactly what you want to see from Giolito with all those swings and misses. So, and another note, it was Houston and Toronto that touched him up for 8 and 7 runs.
That's a good point.
So, you know, really, really good outings. And then Toronto was the other sixth spot, too. So, you know, not that Giolito's a matchup play, but like other than that, it's been not amazing, but pretty good. So I'm really in on Lucas Giolito. I know it won't cost as it won't come as easy to get him as like say a Trevor Rogers. It will cost you a lot more just because the name brand, the draft cost, and the fact that, you know, it's easier to believe in a guy like Lucas Giolito with this big of a track record, but he would be a great, great buy low target for me if you need pitcher.
Yeah, real quick, just because we only got one name left on the list, but I want to see. I know Nick was talking about how tricky it is to Nick Pollock to place him in the list on pitcher list right now. It looks like he's got him in tier 6 at SP32. Same tier as names like Kyle Wright, Logan Gilbert, even. Yeah, deeper on that list, like Patrick Sandoval, Jordan Montgomery. I mean, I think you got to expect that he lands above that. Like, I don't know. Would
Yeah, give me Giolito over all of those names. Like, you know.
Charlie Morton is above him on the list. Like, would you – that's one for Sal.
That's closer, but I'd still take Giolito. That's more just like even in the preseason, right? You know, I had Giolito as a – my SP10 and Morton as an SP18, right? Like, I still think there's that difference between them. Not the knock either, you know, not that's not a knock on Morton, right? It's more just, I like Giolito more, younger, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'd take a chalkboard bet that, you know, if Lucas Giolito finishes within the top 20 starting pitchers at the end of the year on the list, right? Like, I think that he'll bounce back to that level. I think it goes to show, like, despite these struggles and despite the fact that he's a 5.19 ERA, he's still, you know, SP30, right, on Nick's list. It's just because it is Lucas Giolito, right?
Yeah.
I think he'll right the ship sooner rather than later.
For sure. And maybe in terms of draft spot, a little bit closer to this year's Luis Castillo, although the
for sure.
The Ks yes. are at least there. But, yeah, just the frustration and hair pulling on the runs and everything. So nope, that's good discussion. Last, I think, you know, we got to round out and hit on Nick Castellanos. This was another guy that was drafted in, you know, first four rounds of leagues around pick 50. And it just hasn't really been Castellanos that we've come to know. And really we looked at him as kind of a boring high floor pick in a way. And that level of reliability has just not been there this season. So really mundane with a 248 batting average. And the real issue with a 381 slug, OPS under 700, just 7 homers so far for Castellanos. The plate discipline isn't really the issue, Steve. 23.5% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. I think what's very weird about Castellanos' season is that his barrel rate is just 8%, which we always joke about that he was kind of the barrel king for a long time, along with like a CJ Cron and everything. He had just a 4% barrel rate in this past month of June, which is really a low point in any month of his career, save his rookie year. There's only been one other month, which coincidentally was June of 2019, where he had a 4% barrel rate. So not sure if he's just not seeing the ball, but the hard hits are down. Just calls into question again. Now Bryce Harper out of that lineup. What can we expect with Nick Castellanos? We're kind of grasping at straws here, but I know I mentioned on the rundown, but the fact that it's really coming at the against fastballs that he typically crushes this season, he just has not been able to do any damage on fastballs. And it goes back to that question of like the JD Martinez, like, does this guy with his track record really just wake up one day and forget how to hit fastballs in kind of the prime of his career. I don't know what to think about Nick Castellanos, but I know he's been a frustrating person to roster. Do we see a potential bounce back in the second half for him?
I think so. I think this might be a bit of a new team, new big contract, pressing a bit. The 43.2% O swing is the highest of his career, by like 3 percentage points too. The last few years, it's hovered around anywhere between 38% and 40%. This year at 43%. And another thing, it just looks like he's been a bit unlucky too. The 9.1 homer to fly ball rate is, you know, again, lowest of his career, going back to, you know, his rookie year. So when he was in Detroit and like couldn't turn any of those barrels into home runs. I think that it's the combination of that, you know, pressing, some bad luck, then bad luck turns to more pressing. It's a dangerous cycle. And, you know, sometimes, who knows, Castellanos does go on those runs. Like, remember that run with the Cubs that he had? He has changed teams and gone on a run like that, right? So maybe it's just a matter of getting acclimated, getting comfortable. Who knows? Maybe sometimes when an injury like that Harper injury and you're pressed, you know, you're then thrusted to be the best hitter, you know, all around on the team. You know, you could take that ball and run with it a bit. That's a bit more, you know, meta than like any actual analysis. But it's strange, you know, to see him reaching. It just seems like he probably is pressing, and I think it might be a matter of time to figure out. And you know, like you said, it's not like he just doesn't know how to hit fastballs. I think that'll come, and we'll get a hot streak Nick Castellanos sooner rather than later. Yeah, dude, last year he had a 20 run value on the fastball. He absolutely demolished them. Like, you know, that's gonna come. Like, I think it'll come soon for Castellanos. So I think it's a buy. He's probably pressing a bit and should stop that relatively soon.
Yeah, just a 674 OPS last season, 938. Shortened season, which was also really bad and kind of a bad luck season, but still a 784 OPS. 2019, an 862 OPS. So, like, we've seen it long enough. He's still just 30 years old. This one might be, among the entire list, maybe one of the savviest buy lows, just because there's not kind of a recent stretch. I mean, someone's probably going to his StatCast page and seeing that it's not looking normal at all. The ground balls are up a little bit, but I think I'm with you that the fact that it's coming from the fastball seems, and like you said, we talked about it with Lindor last season in the first half, with just like pressing, new team, can get in your head. It can last a little bit longer than a typical slump. He tends to go up and down in general when you look at, you know, his like breakdown rolling charts. So I think this is a good buy low, and it's probably an opportunity where the manager would actually play ball with like trade talk. So I dig it, man. Any other closing thoughts on Castellanos or on the rundown? We made it through the list here.
Yeah, I love it. Castellanos does chase a lot just in general too. You know, I'm just looking at the slider pages now. Like, he's always in the bottom percentile of the league. So for him to chase even more, that's obviously a bit more concerning. But yeah, I don't know. I think that over time, you know, he'll come into a groove and get used to his time in Philadelphia and stop pressing. You know, he is running, like, he has 3 stolen bases, which is strange, right? Like, you know, right? He's Ian Kahn brought that up on the Under the Radar show for The Athletic. Like, if a guy's running, that means they're confident and, like, you know, not afraid to make a mistake, which I think it was a really cool point and a great way to think of things. So I don't know. Maybe he'll just need to get a little bit more comfortable in his skin in Philadelphia and get into a groove here. But yeah, hopefully it's as good of a hit as last year. We talk about a lot of good names. Like, a lot of those guys did bounce back maybe we can make it 2 for 2 and successful shows in identifying these bounce back candidates.
Yeah, it's going to have to be one end of the season. We'll do a little chalkboard recap episode and maybe come back to some of these ones that are a little bit more of the crystal ball and see how some of these panned out. Because, yeah, again, like last year, you know, there's the Goldie and Castillos and Alonso, but there's also Kenta Maeda and Keston Hira. So time will tell, man. It's fun part of the season here. We got All-Star break coming up. We'll have to do kind of a big picture mid-season recap, but till then, I think we're just enjoying baseball, Steve. This was fun as always, and yeah, looking forward to what's next.
Joey Votto, 2 doubles tonight, so there you go. Quite a few extra base hits in the last few games.
All right, Votto. Go get on board. Although they got the buzzsaw of pitching opponents coming up, minus a couple Pirates games. But yeah, love it. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. Episode 62, assessing the second half bounce backs. Steve, had a blast, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.